Science in the Corner is a music history podcast about the Channel Club in Boston, Mass. Dinky Dawson and Tony Rain are your hosts. They interview channel performers and workers, bringing out stories and memories of the great music and events that came through this iconic South Boston venue. Welcome to Two Pints in a Corner with Tony Rain and Dinky Dawson. Tony is still recuperating, so Sean McNally is with me, and he's taking this over right now with the Dogmatics. Welcome to Two Pints in a Corner.
Well, thank you.
The two Dogmatics. We got Jerry and we got Peter. Oh, my goodness. And Sean will be here now. And Sean's going to take over because he's got some questions like as long as his arm. I know he has because he's been into you for many years, but here he is. Sean, it's all yours,
thanks,
kiddo.
You get in, thanks. And thanks, Jerry, for joining us for round two of the Dogmatics. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Basically, Tommy had to step out. Unfortunately, Tommy has a doctor's appointment, but that's something we're kind of all used to at this age, I guess. So that takes first precedence, our health. So we'll miss Tommy on this one, but I'm sure you guys be happy to make fun of him while he's not on the phone with us. So let's do this then. Let's pick up where we left off last time, kind of towards the end of episode one. And for those who are tuning in today, the first time, episode one, we had this past week, and that should be on the podcast list as well when you go to the bostonsbestliverock.com, which, of course, is the channel listing of all the events that happened at the channel. So that was done last week, which was great. This is back for round two because there's still so much more to talk about. But we ended up last week, I think, they called the phase two of the band, you know, after the getting back together doing shows, the Rumbar Records came in being, and you guys got your first new material in 2019 with them. And that was really the first new Dogmatics music in 30 or more years with that She's the One EP. You just remind me again, those of you who might have missed the first episode, how did the Rumbar, of course, Lou and Rumbar, how did that come together for you guys? How did that come into your world, so to speak?
Yeah, I think I was, you know, we were talking about, like, Pete was still Pete was playing with his band, The Hired Men, Peter O'Halloran and The Hired Men, which is kind of a fairly traditional rock and roll with an Irish tilt. And
kind of a side project with whoever might want to play whatever type of music, mainly Irish and folky roots rock, really type shit.
So, and occasionally, and Pete would always ask me if I wanted to come down. And like he said, it was like whoever wanted to play. It would be a cast of characters from Johnny Coe to James, who now plays with us.
Very hard to describe. I just did, so.
Yeah, I mean, accordion players, banjo players, it really was kind of a mishmash of all stuff. And,
he was a tough band,
it was a lot of fun. And, so Pete would still, like, you know, every once in a while play at the Plow and Star, and I would go and see him. I ran into Jay Allen there, and Jay Allen came up to me and had mentioned how Rumbar is a great label, and that Lou is, you know, a big fan of the Dogmatics and would be interested in doing something with us if you guys are interested in it. And I said, sure. I said, I go set it up, get him in touch with us. And that's what happened. So we had a meeting at Foley's downtown in the wintertime. It was a very cold night, I remember. And Peter and Jimmy came, and they both were very sick that night. Lou came in. And now if you've met Lou Mansdorf, he is a bundle of energy. And right away, like, you know, Peter and Paul, Peter and this was at the Kingston Street Foley's downtown in the financial district where everyone used to hang. That was like our big hang back in the
Boston Rockers. After hours, you know, you couldn't really beat it. Well, you could kind of hang on after hours. You couldn't really drink order after hours. You had your beers ordered. You could hang around there for quite a while.
Yeah, I think what they did was, like, they would stop serving at 2, but if you weren't finished with your drink, then you could stay. So if you ordered 2 drinks, then, you could drink those 2 drinks. But that particular night, like I said, it was really cold, kind of empty. Place looks exactly the same. Walk in with the checkerboard floors with, like, the sawdust. Didn't have the Budweiser tall boy cases that we used to sit on, but you know, regular seats. We sat in the back, and Peter and Peter and Jimmy were like, "Oh man, I don't know if I could drink. They had like both like flu-ish," and I said, "I know the cure for that." And then,
matter of fact, he recommended having some nice chocolate with you. And so maybe you missed your calling. You should have been a doctor.
Yes, exactly. So I was Dr. Jameson helped us out. So we sat down and kind of hammered out the details for what we were going to do. And we were like, you know, okay, let's dip our toe back in the rock waters and see what happens. And, you know, then we just had to write some songs. And, you know, I don't know how that, like, I'm thinking about how She's the One. And I think Peter said, hey, you should write, you know, kind of an old school, like,
no,
Buddy Holly.
You wrote the song, and it just happened to sound like it did, and it's worked out.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. You couldn't really ask him. I mean, looking back now, what a perfect marriage, right? Lou is obviously a fan, and Lou is such a huge supporter of not just you guys, but so many Boston bands, and even, like, bringing back some of the, you know, more cultish kind of classic bands over the country, over the world nowadays. He's really kind of made a nice imprint around Boston. And for those who don't know Rumba, I would definitely recommend look up Rumba Records because Lou's done a hell of a job and really very supportive and really just a good guy to be around. And he really is in it for all the right reasons. He loves the music. He loves the scene. And he's been a really good asset to everybody involved. And you guys know that for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. It was the perfect marriage because it was, you know, like we've dealt with other labels where we've never seen the face of the label.
Sure.
We didn't know the guy. We don't know we didn't know where we stood, you know. With sure. Lou, I could call him on the phone. He drops off the records at my house, comes inside and won't leave. Drink all my booze. And I'm like, get out of the house. No, I'm only kidding.
That's the guy you want. That's the guy you want to hang out with.
Oh, you know what I mean? We when we were on Homestead Records, for instance, like, you know, we had a fantastic relationship early on with Sam Berger, who was the original, like, program director guy that signed us. And then Gerard Cosley took over and it went to hell for us. Like, you know, so having the right person at the helm for us is a huge deal. And Lou is the right person guiding the ship that gets our music out to the people that dig it, you know? And like, that's what I'm saying. Like we're in the lane where we're supposed to be, you know, and couldn't be more appreciative. Couldn't be more appreciative having him have our back and really like push our band. He's been nothing but great and continues to support us and push us to make more great rock and roll music, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and to that end, I mean, like I said, in 2019, that first EP, She's the One, that was the first new music in 30 years. And then I think it took maybe two more years beyond that. You dropped the Needle, which, again, that single came out, I think it came out in 2020, late 2021 or 2022, but that was absolutely one of my favorite songs of the whole year. That song was so good. And again, it pays homage to some of the old Boston bands, other people from the different bands you guys respected and played with over the years. It just really, it sounded so fresh, honestly, for something that came out that late in your career. It was really an amazing single. Loved it.
Yeah, I think that came out a great time because, you know, that was right after COVID. And I remember the first time we ever played that show was an outdoor show at For Once. Remember they did it
Point and Yard.
Spot in Somerville. It was outdoors. We played with like Muck and the Myers. What's Dan Kopko's band? The Watts.
Shanghai Lows.
And the Shanghai Lows. It was a great show. And that was the first time that we had just learned the song. And we played it, and we got a huge, when you could feel the energy from, like, the crowd when someone really likes a song. And right away, you felt it. I was like, oh, this is a good one. This is going to be great. And, we recorded that right away at our Ed's barn in Canton. And, that was a good way to kind of come out of COVID. Like, again, Do you remember that?
Yeah. Like, well, we're going to talk about that show. Was awesome. Yeah, I mean, yeah. We'll talk about the shows in a minute. I just want to. You had the recordings you did. You did Drop the Needle, of course, and then the next year after that, we spent some time on this last week, was Rudy Child's documentary about the Dogmatics, which, again, the Dogmatics, a documentary. They were Boston's house band, and it's a really, really great video that really encompasses some incredible footage and incredible archival stuff, pictures and video from the Thayer Street days, your early tours across the country. There's some incredible material they unearthed for that. And that again, it's available on YouTube. Anybody who hasn't seen it yet, it's on Roku, different channels, different networks. But that was like the next kind of big thing that happens. You guys really had like a whole new rebirth at this point with the Drop the Needle, the Rumbar thing, the new documentary comes out. And then the year after that, 2024, was your first new full-length record in 40 years. When that was the whole Nowheresville record that came out in July. It came out in July 25, I think. But you guys worked on it before that. That's 10 new songs that came out with, also with Lou on Rumbar.
Mm.
Recording of that? Were those songs kind of in the can already? You guys just kind of started writing new stuff, or there was some stuff from the old days you brought back in? I'm curious how the record came together.
Pete, you go first. Yeah.
So it's exactly what I think we covered this in the first hour, but when Jerry said we happen to be practicing, and he goes, we should write some more material because, after all, we don't have much time if you think about it. And I did think about it. He was absolutely right. And that's always been, you can always write another song tomorrow. Yeah, maybe not. So might as well do what we can do and get away with and start it up again. So you reading all these things that happened, it seemed like like almost all at once, or a succession of things like, we made this record, made that record. Now the documentary came out. And so it's sort of been this constant role. Till now.
Right, yeah, exactly.
It's great. Yeah. And you guys, you're relevant again, really. And it's like, that's not normal for people. I'm not saying it's not normal. It's just, it's very unusual for, a band who kind of, quote unquote, had their heyday in the mid-80s, so to speak, or early 80s. And then here you guys are, 40 years later, and you're making new music. You're playing a lot of live shows again. You're getting great turnouts. I mean, I was going to have that actually lead into the whole idea that, you play some huge local shows over the past, 3, 4, 5 years, and I'm happy to say I've been to every one of them. But the first one you mentioned earlier, Jerry, was that big July 2022 outdoor show at Boynton Yards in Somerville, Once Ballroom Outdoor Series after COVID. And that was, like you said, Muck and the Myers, Gypsy Moss, Shanghai Lowe's, and you guys played. I mean, there must have been 500 people there. It was incredible. It was one of the first big outdoor shows, I think, after COVID. So people really came out. And like you said, that Drop the Needle song was getting play on the radio, and also on, the video was out. You guys are sharing it online. So people knew the song. A lot of people did know the song already, and that definitely helped get that crowd over there, I thought.
Head back out again,
Well, Pete, exactly. I remember, we never know what a show is going to be like, especially outdoors. Like, if you're an indoor show and you're promoting it, usually they'll tell you, you've sold a 285, you got, we're good now, or whatever. That show, you didn't know anything. I think it was J.J. Gonzin that was running that. It was her, she kind of branded once, and it was outside. And if you remember, everyone had to be in, there was a line. I remember driving up, and it was like, there was a line outside, the chain link fence.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you had to prove that you were vaccinated when you went in. Do you remember that, Pete?
I don't know if it was that one, but it was that one in at Somerville Theater, was it?
Maybe. But it was very unique, and I think, just like you said, people were like, all right, I feel safe. I'm going to go out now. I'm not scared to go. And especially because it was an outdoor show in the afternoon, people were psyched, and the sound was great. And it was, it was a good it was just a good time. I remember we kind of went in all in. We're like, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do it right. We're going to practice. We're going to get better. We're gonna play out. And then we were like, okay, we're doing this. And then Justine came along and started Red on Red. And now we had all, all of a sudden it felt like a scene again. Like, oh wow. So yeah. Competition is the best thing in the world. It makes everyone else better. And that's what was happening. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. This is like, you've got great bands. Like on one night, you might see like 3-4 shows happening at the same time. That's great. Some people are like, oh, why are you playing the same night we're playing? No, that's a good thing. Because now you're relevant again. Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah, no one's going to want to just see one band all the time. You go out and see as many bands as you can, you know?
That's a great point, Jerry, because at that time, like you say, it was just the world was weird coming out of COVID. Like, it was such a strange thing to kind of be among friends again and hearing new music coming out. And then having, like, that show, that one show to me, like, kind of kicked off another resurgence in, like, the Boston scene, so to speak, because you had local labels like Lou and like what he was doing at, you know, Justine at Red on Red, which was really another very, very supportive label of local musicians and local bands and whatnot. And, you know, the radio was, you're getting, you know, it wasn't BCN anymore, but it was definitely on college radio. College radio was still playing, like, your record at this point. This is, you know, from the 80s on. They're still playing new music from Boston bands. And that really
Yeah, we're very lucky.
Yeah, no question. But I think it all kind of helped create this new little bubble of a scene, so to speak, where, you know, it was cool to go out and see bands again, you know, and it went on for a little bit. You know, it still happens. There's still great shows going on, obviously, but coming out of COVID, it was like almost, we all like really needed it, I felt like. It was just such a needed thing at the point to get back to that kind of, you know, community and back and seeing your friends again and seeing live music. It was such a big deal, you know, at the time. Mm-hmm. And then, see, after that was the next show I met after that was the Rat Benefit, the Rat U Reunion. So this is in 2024, way down in Medfield, Mass, Belforge Art Center. They've rebranded that. This old.
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah.
That was a great, you know, old psych ward or psych mental hospital land, and they took it over and they're doing shows there now. But that was a really cool show. Outdoors again, you know, kind of a tribute to the Rat. There was some cool memorabilia back there. Some Rat employees are there talking on stage, and you guys played that show. That was a great show as well. And then the next time I have you guys play after that was for our mutual friend John Boy. Of course, John Boy Franklin from the channel was very close to you guys and a huge fan. You know, we had a memorial show for you. He passed away sadly from cancer.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, that show was at the end of December. That was 12/28/24. That was a great show at Paradise. That was a lot of fun seeing you guys there. And then the next time I think you guys played was the record release party for your new record, for Noblesville. And that was July last year, July of 2025 at the Franco-American in Waltham. And that show was another show. Was just, man, what a turnout. I mean, the lineup was amazing. You got Last Stand back together. Band 19 played. Tom Baker, Double Down, Gypsy Moss, Jay Allen, The Arch Criminals, Black Cheers, Stop Calling Me Frank, and you guys, of course. I mean, that show was, again, like another high school reunion. It was like 500 people there. It was incredible. It's like inside, outside, hanging out. The bands playing all day. It was an amazing show. That must have felt really good for you guys.
Yeah, that was a lot of hard work to put that together, but that was like, you know, a different show. You're never going to see that stuff again. You really have to do the work to put something like that together. It's not like, hey, you're renting up the Middle East and, like, you know, everything's there. That was built from the ground up. That was like a 5-month, you know, workout. And everything had to go right, and it did. And there were so many people that helped behind the scenes, like, that were great.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of times you see a lot of chaos, you know, like where, you know, bands changing. It went flawless. We were ahead of time, I remember, like towards the end. Like usually it's like one band goes over this at time, the next band gets pissed off, whatever. This was everyone, it was like there was no drama, nothing. It was awesome.
Right. Right. Now for eight bands, you know, the thing that was nice about that show as well is you could go in and outside. So I mean, the parking lot was half the crowd the inside sometimes. There was just somebody still hanging out front, just getting some air and, you know, reconnecting with friends. And it was just such a fun night all around. The whole day was amazing. Just incredible show. All the bands are awesome. Really cool vibe in the room that day. A lot of friends from the old days came out for the show. It was such a good time all around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a blast. It was a blast. And then, you know, like, I mean, there were people that donated their time. I think David, Carl Plasta, did the sound and then asked if he could bring the David Bieber videographers along, which they did. They donated all the time. They did it for free. And we had David Minahan, you know, supplied the PA, set it up. And so, I mean, you know what I mean? The combination of a community of all these Boston rockers, big, small, all helping each other to produce right. this incredible show. And, yeah, it was, you know, I saw people I haven't seen in 25 years, you know?
Right. Yeah, you got Billy Jordan and Tommy Wilson helping out. It was just like the old days. It was awesome. It was awesome.
Yep.
So, and I guess the next time I had you guys play, I think it was the this past spring. You guys did the first one of those shows, the Which Side Are You On music teach out at the Burn. That was back in February. And you guys, those had a couple, two, three, four songs, so to speak. Do you guys remember that show? And give me some idea on the songs you selected to do, because it's kind of a protest show for the crazy times we're going through right now. Again, it's about building community and trying to, you know, find that common cause of music and, you know, people doing the right thing, so to speak. So you guys are invited to join that show at the Burn. And maybe talk about the songs you guys decided to play that day.
Yeah, well, James Sullivan, the writer, and Joyce Lanahan, who's a friend from the old days, but she's also kind of a heavy hitter around town with that stuff. They had set up that sort of spoken word protest speak out thing, you know. And they asked us, me and Jerry, to do it. Is that right, Jerry?
Yeah. Yeah, she wanted you and I just to do it.
And
right?
My thing was,
Pete said, no.
We're all together, so let's, you know, if we could just bend the rules a little bit and have us all do it. And because they have a house band who is incredibly great, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
but we don't want to sound good.
Yeah, and we didn't want to step on their toes either, but we kind of did it. And, oh, man, they helped us out. A lot.
So the songs you play some of your own, but some other couple covers songs as
Go
well.
Ahead.
Right?
Yeah, we used the drummer Paul.
Buckley. Yeah, he was.
Paul Buckley.
He came to my house in Canton where I have the rehearsal space, and he came up and we went over the song we went over the songs with him, and he was awesome. Like, it's funny, like, you know, sometimes when you have a musician, you know. Some can be like, I don't know, he fit right in right away. Yeah. He loved it here. He didn't want to leave. He said he had a blast.
He's a quick study, he's a total pro. And like, I forget the reason, but Tommy was unavailable. And so it was just going to be a quickie and do three.
Tommy was still hurt. He had the trigger finger.
Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah,
right,
Tommy had some issues with his fingers, like, you know, just they couldn't bend, and so he wasn't allowed to play. So
operation and all that, you know. So yeah. So we did that, and so we did. How many songs did we do, Jerry?
We did four. That was another thing. They, you know, all the other. We were only supposed to do two, but we wanted to do four.
Handle up a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Not only we said no to the, like, nope, we're not going to play with your band. We're gonna use our own band, and we're gonna play more songs.
But also, it's a real cross-section. It runs the gamut of musical styles and performance. There's spoken word. There's, you know, rap acts, a lot of folky-type stuff. And just it runs the gamut of things you might – of music, which you may not hear, you know? So it was –
And
really
that was a Tuesday
song.
Night, right, Peter?
Yeah.
It was jam-packed. Like, I mean, it's amazing that they put that series together and it's become – so successful. Like, it goes on sale, literally it sells out in 5 minutes.
It's totally worth it. And especially in this day and age where
they've done an amazing job. They actually started out the Blizzard Lounge and it just outgrew that like really fast, and then now it's the Burn, and it's really outgrown the Burn. But I think they're having a hard time finding a bigger room, and the Burn's great, but it, like you say, it sells out. Yeah. Like, immediately, once it goes on sale, it sells out. It's been a Tuesday or Wednesday night every time, and it's always packed. So for those who want to find out more about it, again, you know, Joyce Lenihan, James Sullivan from the Globe, he has a book out about protest songs, and it's look up online.
And there was sort of parameters. There were some protest songs that were, like, you know, suggesting if you guys want to, you know, do a cover. And
right.
Everybody, of course, does Evil of Destruction because it's a really cool song. And very prescient in its day, and also in this day, if you hear the lyrics, you know. And so we did a remake of that, changed the lyrics a little bit. Our guy, James Young, wrote some pretty funny, clever, and also prescient lyrics for that.
Yes, absolutely. No, it was great. It was a great time. In fact, it's on, I know, it's past my email on my Facebook. I have it on my, I shot the other thing on my Facebook account. So if you want to look at my, look at the whole series, the whole set, it's on my Facebook. So, yeah, and again, the series is called Which Side Are You On? It's a music TV show. Take a peek online and read about it. It's a really great series. It's a really great Boston, you know, some performers you've heard about, like, you know, I guess Doug Maddox played, the Bags just played last time. They've got some other people that are kind of on the up and coming, people from Berkeley and whatnot, and the music scene you might not be experienced with or be aware of, but like Peter was saying, some rap people, some R&B people, some jazz people, it's some spoken word. It's some, it's a really, really cool series. And
you're going to meet some people that, you know, you're going to meet and you're going to like it, you know, different that you may not ordinarily be.
You're going to see some incredible talent as well.
Song for that too.
Oh yeah, that was that. Oh, 999.
To record. Yeah.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
You know, I might got to get my 2 cents in once in a while, and that's it. So we're probably going to record it later, but there's a live version of that song kicking around out there, and if you want to seek it out, it's probably not too hard.
Very cool. Very cool.
It's and called the next show you guys. 999 to the fastest swine.
The next show you guys did was another big benefit, another friend, of course, Jeff Conley of the Liars, who, of course, been dealing with some cancer issues and health problems. So you guys are part of this big event that came together, this benefit. This is back in March this year, 2026, at the Middle East Downstairs. And that thing was announced and sold out real fast, of course, because the Mission of Burma, who, of course, had not played in probably 10 or 15, 10 or 12 years, I think. Put out they were going to do this because, you know, Jeff and way back in the day. And you guys played that show. An Actual Axe played that show. Classic Ruins played. That was another incredible show. Maybe talk about that show a little bit, if you don't mind.
So that, you know, like, again, no one cares about when they go on. The only thing we said, we wanted to go on early. So they're like, yeah, we're going to put you on right after Mission of Burma. I was like, okay, yeah. So, you know, like probably half the people are there to see them, but that doesn't matter to us. We don't get concerned in that about that. What we were though, Pete was like, there's a song by this band, The Hangmen, What a Girl Can't Do, which the Liars used to play all the time. And it is a rocker. So we're like,
I always thought we should cover it, but it's kind of like it's off limits because the Liars did such a great job of it early on. So it's kind of like, hands off.
So, like, well, so now we have the perfect opportunity to do it, right, Pete? And we learn the song. And then, so where I live in Canton, Danny McCormick, who is the guitar player for the Liars, probably the guitar player that lasted the longest for the Liars.
Yeah, and he was at DMZ as well, yeah?
Yeah, and he was, so he lives in Stoughton, and I called him up, and I said, hey, we're playing this Liars show, and he already knew about it, and he was like, I don't know, Jerry. he goes, you know, I don't think that Jeff likes it. He goes, and I don't want to cause any drama when we go there. And I said, okay, no biggie. Anyways, the next day he calls, like, you know, I'm going to do it. So he's like, and I'm not kidding. So this went, he came over one day and we worked on that one song for like, I was probably the longest we've ever worked on a song, Peter, right? For 2.5 hours, maybe.
And he was a bit of a perfectionist himself. And let me just say that back in the day, me, like, being the three chord, you know, guitar player that I am, watching that guy and go, this guy's great. Back in like 1980, seeing this guy play, I loved him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I loved his style. And then just getting to like see him and hang out and meet him, you know.
And then he came up there and he was a little persnickety and like kind of like, no, not like that. Again and again. And we just beat us in. And then, The day before the show, he calls me. He's like, yeah, I can't do it. He goes, I don't know why. He's like, I don't know. I'm getting too much flack. I think that Jeff's going to lose his mind. I'm going to ruin the whole show. I'm like, you know, like, you got to be kidding me. Well,
that was great. That was such a nice twist.
Day of the show, he calls me up. I'm going to do it. Can you come and pick me up at this time?
Yeah.
And I bring him down there, and, you know, we're in the dressing room. He sees Jeff. They see each other. They go up, give each other a big hug. It, whatever happened in the past, it didn't matter anymore.
Right.
Possible.
That is there for the, anyway, Jeff could be an interesting guy, obviously, and had to work with at times, but of course it's
interesting.
But, you know, yeah, it was all love that night. And in fact, that was such a cool thing you guys did, inviting him to come out on the stage with you. And that was just another great,
was another
great show.
The song came out good, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so after that, I think that you guys, you have a show, you know, this will come out after, this episode will show up online after your next show. I know you're playing this coming Saturday, but you also, the next show I think you guys are doing is later in June, right? June 27th, a Portraits gig. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I don't know nothing about it.
I can take, I mean, I hope you know about it. It's done, Eddie's doing it from South County Frank, of course. It's an outdoor thing, Porch Fest in Dedham.
Oh, in Dedham. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're playing that.
Yeah, that'll be good.
We're off from, so that's where, like, where I was today. I just met with Dan Quill, who runs the Boston Bears hockey Cub team, which is a team for like autistic special needs sort of players. He's been doing it for a long time, and we've done benefits before, mostly on the ice. And so we were sitting there trying to figure out the logistics. So early in the day for that show in Rockland, that same day that we're playing the Porch Fest. And
breaking news. Okay.
We're doing two shows, like the early one with Spiller and Jack Clark's son's band. Jack Clark is the drummer for Spiller.
Yeah.
His son has a band called Judy's Fur Coat.
Hmm. So that's awesome. And Jack, of course, also plays in Jerry's Kids. And my God, so many bands over the years.
And he's like the nicest guy in the world. We always say he must have killed someone early on, and he's paying, you know, he's paying it forward because he's just so nice. We just don't, we can't believe we met someone so nice. But yeah, so we're gonna do two shows. That's like in the old days. We used to do that all the time. We'd play early, then play another show later across town or whatever. You know, don't do that much anymore.
No, that's great. That's great. I didn't know about that second show. That's fantastic. So
yeah,
that's great news for sure. But so the show I was first talking about there was you're doing the Dedham Porch Fest, which is, you know, for those who don't know, these Porch Fests have been really coming up popular. I think it started in Somerville maybe 10 years ago, but now almost every town, it seems, anywhere in the metro Boston area has these things called Porch Fests where bands play all over the town on people's, you know, front porches or their driveways or front yards, and it's just free. It's a free music thing. It goes for hours. You can walk around town and see different bands and support. Again, it's another way to support the local music scene, and that is on the Dedham Porch Fest. And again, Eddie from Stop Calling Me Frank, he's organizing. I think it's at his place, so they're playing.
Yeah.
Instamatics are playing, and the Dogmatics are playing. So now for that one, it's another show. But that's cool, though.
And you know what?
We just had to talk about that. So the players thing in the Boston Bears. You guys, it's to raise money, I assume, for the team. Yes.
For the earlier show, it's to raise money for the team, which is, you know, ice is expensive. And and all these like Jack and his son have been donating their time for years, like going on 10 years. I'll skate with them occasionally and help, and my son has done it as well. But John Quill has a son, Sean, who is autistic, that is on the team. And so he was the one who was organized this, and it's grown, you know. And so they've gotten, you know, it started out really small. Now it's become a lot bigger. So I think once a year they try to do a fundraiser, and they usually do it at an ice rink, and it's at 7 a.m. in the morning, and they don't do that well. And I said, how about doing a rock show in the afternoon when people are up, and they, you know, so.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, okay, let's do that. And then Jack jumped on. And so, yeah, that's what we're going to do. It's going to be in Rockland. We'll do like a 40-minute set. That's where our friend Rudy and Lori Childs literally live, right down the street. Lori will probably come up on stage and say a few words first, because she's helped behind the scenes with this as well. and she's running right now. What is she running for, Pete?
State representative of her district.
Yeah.
She's a good person for that.
She's our merch bitch. And listen, I didn't call her that. She named herself that. She has named herself the merch bitch, and she likes
it. It is a positive. People, that's kind of a joke, but it is a very positive thing for sure. It's kind of an inside joke in the local business, but very, very true, and it's a very positive thing. That's excellent.
Like, Pete is my merch bitch. Like, I make him pick up everything for me.
I don't know what you're thinking about right now, kid.
Pete's going to punch me the next time he sees me like he always does.
I'm in the band, so what I'm asking you right now is clarify the time on these things, okay? What time on the 27th?
I'm scheduled a band meeting right now. Go ahead, tell me the details, Jerry.
Time, bitch. Let's go.
the first time, bitch. Yes. You mean the guy that keeps everything organized? How about that? And then later we're just going to drive straight over to Eddie's and probably play there at about 4 o'clock. And we don't have to bring any gear to any of these. We just have to plug in our guitars and play.
Okay.
Beautiful thing. That's awesome.
And you know what that's called, bro?
Any more shows you guys can announce at this point or anything else on the schedule that you know about, you talk about or no?
Well, you know what you can do is, and I mean, we go to our website, which is thedogmatics.com. It lists all of our shows that are up and coming.
Great.
And that website was created by our mandolin player James Young.
I was gonna say a merch bitch. Okay, yep.
He's I don't know what kind of bitch he is, but he's some kind of bitch. Let's see.
Good dude, great dude. He's added a whole other level to what you guys are doing these days, which is awesome.
Yeah. The guys I was just with, they were like. Like, they're all hockey players. They're like, what's going on with the guy in the band? They're making it sound nice. And we're like, Peter. Like, we want to hear more Peter.
Yeah. No, everybody brings their own little bit. So, you know.
Oh, I know. But it is funny, like, how some people are just like, he was telling me how this one guy, John Quill, who is running this hockey league, him and his friends would go to the show just to hear Peter sing.
Yeah,
and he wasn't kidding. Yeah, because they said it, he goes, where do you hear him sing this song? My little sister's got a motorbike. You've never heard anyone sing like this.
Peter does like, what did you say? It is awesome. It's a totally different thing than what James would do, but it is awesome. I do agree.
Yeah. What did your father say?
He's trying to stay in tune, I guess.
What did your father say?
Oh, I think I told you in the last.
I know you did. It was awesome.
he listened to us play. We played live on ERS one time very early on, and he listened to it. And the next day, he sees us. He goes, "You guys got a lot of gall." I'm like, okay. But
I love
it. As far as an upcoming show, let's not forget that in the middle of July, we're probably going to play at the Plymouth Mass.
Oh yeah, that's already set in stone. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
nice.
You know, they're friends of the band, and they brewed a beer, Dogmatics Italian Pilsner, which is delicious.
So I was just going to say, you guys have your own custom beer these days, too, so things are really on the up and up. Yeah, talk about that a little bit, if you don't mind, the brewery or not.
That's what happens when you're a minor league band, and you sell out, you get your own beer. Yeah. I think the beer's a Kolsch. I've been corrected.
But it's
a very,
okay, gotcha.
That was a very delicious brew, and it's kind of an honor, you know. And we get on there, we play, we've done it. We did it last year at this time, and I think my brother Johnny's band possibly is going to be out from Tucson, Arizona, and play with us. I don't know if all of them are going to be here, some combination thereof.
Awesome. I can't think of a better sponsor than a beer company for Dogmatics, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's good too. The beer is actually good.
Yeah,
I know. You think we can get that beer, right?
You know, So upcoming live shows, go to the dogmatics.com and see what the guys have going on, listeners. And then as far as I want to talk about also other projects you guys have been involved in. I know Tommy can't make the call today, but I just want to touch. He mentioned he was in a band, a very, very brief band called DFO. And they actually played the channel one time in 87. Now, do you guys have any recollection what DFO was? Because he said it was a disaster. They were banned from the club kind of thing. So do you have any memories of that at all?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it either. I just know that it was a rap band.
That's enough said right there, probably. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, they were like
early on, yeah,
like Vanilla Ice or something, you know, like that. I'm guessing.
I did one show in November 87. It was a Monday night at the channel, and that was their one and done performance. But aside from that, though, Jerry, you also in the Matt Weeds, more prominently as far as compared to what the Dogmatics were doing. Dogmatics played the channel 15 times. Matt Weeds played there 10 times, which I was kind of surprised to see how many times you played there. Tell us about the Matt Weeds a bit and how that came together. Again, this is, after, of course, sadly, Paul had passed and, Dogmatics kind of went on pause for a bit there. But tell me how the Matt Weeds came together with and who was in that band.
So, again, that came together. All these guys that were in the band I knew prior from the Dogmatics playing with different bands from around town, primarily like the Stranglehold. I became really good friends with Jimmy Keough and Richie Mackenzie Hughes, who was in that band, and Dave Fredette. So when the Dogmatics stopped playing, Peter moved out of the loft. I stayed there. I was still living there, and me and Jimmy Keough were hanging out. Not really playing, but we were talking about starting a band. We had some names we kicked around. I remember we had like Chicks Dig Us was one of them. Oh, We Dig Chicks. And then we're like, oh, that sounds really gay. Oh, I don't know if I can say that word, but
okay.
So I ended up starting the band with me, Jimmy Keough. We had a drummer, Dave Collins, who was old DYS drummer. We got Johnny Getches from Cambridge, who played in the Dogmatics, incredible like keyboard player that would later go on to play in the Cherry Pop and Daddies and Mighty Mighty Bosstones. And then we had Frank Schock, who was the bass player who played with Last Stand. Mm. And I forget what happened if he was playing in Last Stand at the Matt Weeds at the same time. Do you remember that, Pete? You might have been not around then, but why he was playing with us and not in Last Stand?
Yeah, I was out of the picture. I think Frank East had other fish to fry at some point.
Yeah, and he was a fantastic bass player. So, at that point, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think we had we had Nate Bowditch, the third from Brookline. He was the sax player who had played in Mission Impossible, which was a ska band from Cambridge. And literally, we were doing like what the Bosstones are doing, but with a more rock element. We had 8 people total in the band, and we kind of got a little deal with Fort Apache, and if we got signed, we were gonna give them a percentage of the deal, whatever it was, because they really liked the music, and it never came into fruition, but we were playing a lot. And Theo, who was the front man, was an incredible, like, live wire. And like I said, Dave Fredette was in the band, who was a fantastic guitar player, but he left and joined, the Flies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure, with Ned. Yep.
And then went on to do the Titanics. And, so we lost him. We picked up Richie Mackenzie. Then we had this kid Malachi. We ended up having Chris Erickson. We went through so many people in that. Chris Daugherty from Gangrene would play with us when he was off tour. And it was a great sounding band, but very different. The more people that you have in a band, the harder it is.
Oh, no question.
It's been like, dealing with 4 personalities. Imagine dealing with 8.
Right. Yeah. What do you guys think, Peter?
Erickson, you asked me. I was briefly in a band with him in, say, 87 or 88. After me, Eddie McGarry, were in the Flying Spots, and I think we played a couple of parties. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, you actually played with us one time in Cambridge.
You said Erickson's name, and he was a fantastic guy in guitar player, too.
Different type of guitar player than Fredette, but equally. Yeah, you can't really say, like, this guy's better than the other guy because Erickson's style was more, like, country.
But you guys did have a good buzz going. I mean, you guys played the channel 10 times within a year and a half. So, I mean, you know, from coming out of nowhere, basically. I mean, obviously, like I said, other bands kind of spawned the Matwees. But you guys went right into playing some big shows. I have the list of shows. I'll go through them real quick here. First appearance, August, a Saturday night, which that tells you something right there. Saturday night, August 22nd of 1987. Nervous Eaters, The Bags, Wickerman, Matweeds, and the DTs. That's a hell of a show for your first show in the channel. So that was a Saturday night. And then a month and a half later, the Neats, Tribe, Matweeds, a few other local bands. What a great lineup. Yeah. And then the next time I did that, 2 months later, Saturday night with the Liars. So Liars, Rash of Stabbings, Matweeds, you know, fantastic lineup once again on the Saturday night. And then you guys get back. And next, June of 88 with Tribe, The Bags, Matweeds, The Slaves, Lemmings, Tax Collectors. That was another great show. And just, again, you guys got some really good gigs. I know you had a record out that a song was in that compilation, the Rock Turns to Stone compilation, which I think is the first time I heard Matweeds. And that did really well locally. As far as, I mean, I thought it was pretty much all of the radio stations around this area. You guys, your song got played quite a bit.
Yeah, that song, I think it was Stay. The name of the song was Stay, and that was actually written. I wrote that for the Dogmatics at the very end, and we just never got to it. And then that was the first song that we learned, I think, with the Matweeds.
That's a great song.
But we did our big show there. We got offered to play with the Ramones. So we.
That's right. Yep. That was the next show. That was the next one I talk about. September of '88. Ramones, Voodoo Dolls, and Matweeds. Which is, you know.
So we went on first. The Voodoo Dolls at that time. I think Evan Shore was in it. The guy from Muck and the Myers and Dave Harrison. And the one thing I remember about that show. So you get the dressing rooms. I think we talked about the dressing rooms. You have the dressing room all the way over to the right. We had the dressing room to the left. We only got $50 and a case of beer, but they gave us an unlimited guest list. And we must have got like 40 people. And it was ridiculous. And but great. Right before the show, so I watched the Ramones do their sound check. And they went into that middle room where all the pinball machines were, and they were all circled around the pinball machine playing. And we were like kind of off to the side, kind of just watching them. Like, you know, they weren't really, you know, they weren't friendly to us, but we were just kind of like just eavesdropping. And at one point they were like, hey, want to go to a hotel? I don't know. You want to go to a hotel? Oh, yeah, let's go to a hotel. You want to go to a hotel? Let's go to a hotel. it was like, there was like a cartoon. And right before we go on, the manager from the Ramones walks into our dressing room and he goes, you know, I forget his name now, but he was like, hey, my name is so-and-so from the manager for the Ramones. I just got a couple of things I want to go over with you. And we're like, okay. We're like, no one's ever done that to us. You know? You say anything bad about the Ramones, show's over. You touch the Ramones equipment, show's over. You damage any of the equipment on stage, you own it. Guys, have a great show, okay? We'll see you later. I think Keo, for, you know, probably the first thing he got off, the fucking Ramones suck, and kicked an amp, probably, like, you know, just knowing how it would.
The worst thing you do is tell you what not to do, right? That's awesome.
Yes, exactly. It's like, you don't do that. Come on. Right. Keo wrote a song about himself called Super Punk. It's like you're telling the wrong guy. He's going to be like, yeah, okay, yeah, no problem. Fuck you as soon as he walks out the door, you know? But
I appreciate your Ramones impression too, Jerry. That was pretty spot on.
Want to go to a hotel? You want to go to a hotel? No, go to a hotel.
It's funny. For some reason, in my mind, when I hear them talk, it's like I equate them to like the Hanson brothers on Slapshot.
Oh my God.
The interplay, right?
They made the dogmatics look like Mensa students, you know?
That's great. Yes, the Ramon show, another great show. And then a month later, as I mentioned, that record came out, the Rock Turns to Stone, that local label Vile Records put out. And you guys, the record had a lot of airplay. You guys did a two-show play. It was a Sunday. There was an afternoon show at 1 o'clock and then a night show. But the 1 o'clock show, it was Slaves, Matt Weed, Titanics, Blackjacks, Rash to Stabbings, Reptile Kiss, the amazing lineup, nighttime lineup again. This is again for the same day, 8 o'clock, all age, 21 plus show. Dogzilla, Matt Weeds, Titanics, Neutral Nation, Nova Mob, and Voodoo Dolls. So, you know, some of the real highlight bands from that era were on that compilation to the point where you had two record release shows in the same day.
Yeah, that was Mark Melicaro, right? He put that up.
I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then a couple weeks after that, you're playing with Barrons, good friends of yours to this day, Barrons and the Savages, Barrons Whitfield and the Savages, Titanics, Matt Weeds. That was on a Friday night. And the next show, a month later, this is New Year's Eve. So, you know, at that point, you definitely have a name in Boston. You're playing the chin on New Year's Eve. You're in a support band. That means you've got your name for yourself. So New Year's Eve 88 was Tribe, yep. Titanics, Matt Weeds, Slaves, Delusion to Grandeur. And that was a BCN live telecast, which... again, kids, back in the day, sometimes, you know, WBCA was a gigantically important station in probably the Boston music scene in this time frame. So you talk about December 31st, New Year's Eve, 1988, literally WBCN broadcast the entire show live on the radio. So
yeah, that was pretty cool.
What an amazing thing,
That band Tribe loved us for some reason. They would always ask for us to be their support. And they... You know, not my cup of tea, but if you ever listen to their music, I mean, that girl could, she could.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They had some great, because their big song was Abort.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, they had some good songs in the radio for sure. They did a lot of good play in Boston. They did very well. And then do I have you guys playing one more time in the channel, one more Matt Weeds game. This is a 10th and final show. It's 2 months later, Saturday, the 25th of, 1980, of February, 89. Again, good big local bands, Bim, Scala Bim, Dogzilla, the Matt Weeds, Delusions of Grandeur, and Big Clock. Then, you know, that was the last time you guys played in the channel. But again, you guys had almost every show was a premium, like a Friday or Saturday or that Sunday All Ages show. So the band made, you know, some impression in town. And that was all within the course of, like I said, about a year and a half, playing the channel 10 times. So that says a lot about how good the band was, honestly.
And then we burned to the ground in like 1 week. And watch it. No one wanted to play. We were just like, no. And that, again, it was a band where people were coming and going. It's just, it wasn't a band like the Dogmatics. I mean, good band, good players, but not the camaraderie. And it's just one of those things. You know, I am always surprised when I see, I mean, the Dogmatics have always seen bands come and go. And there'd be all these different players going in and out. I mean, I think me and Peter have talked about it. Like, how could you be in a band with all these different members and actually, you know, I don't know, be a band, you know? Yeah. Are you really a band?
Right. Now, it's like you mentioned before, I mean, it's like being in a marriage, right? And, you know, more than half in a divorce. It's just, and when there's four guys, it's one thing. That's tough as it is, but never mind five, six, seven guys. You're trying to, you know, rotating players. It's like, That can become a major, major challenge for anybody, you know? And I want to leave out Peter either. So, Peter, we talked about a little bit in the early part, but before Dogmatics, you were in a band called Joey O and Mr. Tigos. That was a short-lived act, right? Then the Dogmatics were pretty much your main gig music-wise.
Yeah, it was kind of a formative thing. I was in with Barry Hall, and this guy who grew up with Joey Olson in Dorchester. And he was kind of ahead of his time. He was like, he wrote a rock opera. He's building his own amps. He wasn't just a drummer, but he was a very good drummer. But he was just like this really focused dude and a brilliant dude. He ended up doing a song called, he ended up being the drummer for TK's band, the Spearhead Go, at first. And they did a song and made a video called The Bomb. They're going to, Ronnie Reagan's going to drop The Bomb. Very catchy, cool song. And so that didn't really pan out. We were going to do this. We got to set together about 8 songs, and it just fizzled out. Everybody had. But we've been around a long time, kind of. We're in and out, and we've had different members and all that. And we originally started doing that at my aunt's in South Boston, just kind of like, hey, let's start to learn this stuff. And like, I guess I learned how to play minor chords back in the day and all that stuff.
That's cool.
So we've gone on from there, and with my cousins and everybody else. We just do it. And it's very, it was originally impromptu, but Jay and I, James Young there, the mandolin player, we kind of started, took it off in a tangent more and called it the Hyatt. It became Pete O'Halloran and the Hyatt Band, and just the Hyatt Band, and we played different things.
Why isn't it Peter O'Halloran and James Young in the Hyatt Band? Why is it just Peter O'Halloran and the Hyatt Band?
Because I've got this horrible ego problem.
That was what I was waiting for. All right. On that note, you guys, we got come down and have two pints in the corner with you.
The Shady Roosters, right? Is that the name of their band?
Yeah, they have a house band called the Shady Roosters. They're dynamite. Really good.
Shady.
We got a horn section and everything.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome. Thank you guys again for making the time. It was a lot of fun once again. I had no doubt we'd fill a full hour, second hour.
Definitely. Thank you again, guys. You guys have done a lot of stuff.
You know what you can do is, and I mean, we go to our website, which is thedogmatics.com. It lists all of our shows that are up and coming.
Great.
And,
thank
you. Thank you, Sean, and thank you, Dinky. We appreciate your friendship and your generosity with your time.
You're welcome. And you guys, you're really on top of it. And I love it from day one when you were in the damn loft stuff. I thought, oh, here we go. This is going to be great. And then one story after the other just continues. I mean, it's life, and I love it. That's how it is.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to thank you for, and this is Two Pints in a Corner, closing out.